Did you know that there is a key part of egg cells and sperm that can greatly impact egg quality, sperm quality, conception potential, miscarriage risk, and outcomes for mom and baby? They are called the mitochondria, and to say it simply, they are really important. The coolest thing is there is so much that we can do to optimize and improve our mitochondria. On the podcast episode today, I interview Dr. Kalia Wattles, a naturopathic doctor and certified functional medicine practitioner who specializes in fertility and the mitochondria. She walks us through what they are, how they impact fertility, and our overall health, and she gives us actionable steps that we can start doing today to optimize them. Let's get started. Welcome to Healthy as a Mother, the podcast for becoming and being a mother, with your co-hosts, Dr. Leah Gordon and Dr. Morgan McDermott, two naturopathic doctors who get it.
Each week, we teach you how to be the healthiest mother you can be, from fertility and preconception to pregnancy and birth prep, through postpartum and throughout motherhood, empowering you with the natural health guidance and education you're not getting elsewhere, so you can confidently navigate the broken system at large.
The real, the raw, the untalked about. And remember, this information is not intended to diagnose, treat, or manage any disease. Always consult with your doctor before making any changes. I am so excited for today's podcast. I have with me Dr. Kalia Wattles. She is a naturopathic doctor, a certified functional medicine practitioner, and the founder of Functional Fertility. As an educator, podcaster, speaker, and clinician, Dr. Wattles combines cutting-edge science with treasured traditional wisdom, applying a systems biology approach to discover the root cause of fertility struggles. With a deep commitment to advancing the field of functional medicine and improving patient outcomes, her patient-centered approach helps individuals cultivate abundant health for pregnancy and beyond. I am so thrilled to have you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I've been looking forward to this. I just always have a good time chatting with you.
I know, this is so fun. And I just feel like you're such a wealth of knowledge. And, you know, we learn from each other in the field as naturopathic doctors so much and just, you know, help the communities at large by pinging our experience and all of that. And you're definitely someone I look up to. So I'm thrilled to have you here. And for anyone who doesn't know, just tell us a little bit about yourself, kind of how you became a naturopathic doctor, functional medicine practitioner, and in this field of fertility in particular.
Yeah. So I think we're all drawn to naturopathic medicine. Many of us are because of our own health or something in our own story that makes us want to turn over more stones and look a little deeper and understand our own health trajectory. And so that was certainly true for me. That's what drew me to naturopathic medicine. And then 2 years into my ND program, I got pregnant with my first daughter. And it was such an incredible transformative experience that I really realized I wanted that so bad for anyone else who was called to be a parent. And it was such a stunning revelation to me to be in this, you know, my second degree in the health sciences and to realize how much I didn't know about preconception care and about pregnancy and about postpartum and all of it. And I realized, like, if I don't know a lot about this, then there's others out there who don't know and don't know where to look. Like, at least I had the resources and I knew who to turn to. So that was my call to action. And I started to understand how naturopathic medicine could support patients really along their fertility journey, no matter where they were. If they wanted to get pregnant for the first time, they've never tried before, just want to do their, you know, be proactive in their healthcare. That was one area. For those who were going through fertility treatment, I knew for certain that even if they, you know, still needed or wanted to pursue IVF, that we could really help improve outcomes. So I started cold calling the reproductive endocrinologists in my area. Like, listen, I know I'm not a traditional OB-GYN student, but can I come shadow you? Can I come do rotations with you? And fortunately, they let me. So I started rotating through my local fertility clinics, you know, in the operating room, in with the new patient visits, helping with the intake. And it became so apparent to me how all of the work we do in naturopathic medicine could support patients with their lifestyle factors, with their nutrition, with their body systems. So then by my final year in my program, I got pregnant again, had my second daughter. And so it was really just this combination of my own journey into parenthood, my transition into naturopathic medicine, and my experience working with these fertility patients that fueled my passion to talk about this subject.
Oh, I love that. That's so amazing and such a rare gift that you have to
know the naturopathic side and also have experience in the traditional fertility treatment model, I feel like we're very rare, you know, the people that kind of know both sides. And I think that it's such a blessing, and it's why you know things so well. And that segues us really well into the topic that we're going to be talking about today, which is mitochondrial health. And for a lot of people, they probably don't know what mitochondria even is. So before we talk about its role in fertility, can you even speak to what is mitochondria and then kind of how it plays a role in fertility?
Absolutely. I'd love to. So I'll kind of preface this with the reason I care so much about mitochondrial health is in the functional medicine model, we think about body systems. It's a body systems mm-hmm. approach to any condition, but fertility is certainly one of them. And so that means, you know, when someone comes in for fertility, we're really thinking outside of just hormones or just the uterus and the ovaries. I feel like we can maybe get stuck in these limiting patterns of we're only looking at the reproductive axis. So we're really looking at someone's entire body system. That means for me, their assimilation. So the food that they take in and how they take those nutrients and put them into work in their body, their defense and repair mechanisms. So that's their immune function and their ability to fight inflammation. That's energy production, which is where mitochondria will really come into play. And we'll talk about that in a minute. It's biotransformation and elimination. So the way we contact environmental toxicants, process them, and eliminate them from the body. It's our transport mechanism, so our circulation, our lymphatic system. It's our communication nodes, our hormones, and our neurotransmitters, and the structural integrity of our body, meaning big structures like our bones, all the way down to little structures like our mitochondria and our cell membranes. Mm-hmm. So that's just kind of the little primer on how mitochondria fits into the body systems. So I'm going to invite everyone to like think all the way back to 10th grade biology. I can still hear my 10th grade biology teacher's voice in my mind. Mitochondria are these tiny structures that are found in most cells. They act as the term that everyone remembers is they're the powerhouse of the cell. Mm-hmm. And they're responsible for generating energy. So we can kind of think of them, I like to think of them as cellular batteries, because they convert mm-hmm. energy, you know, maybe from food that we eat, into a form that cells can use. And mitochondria mm-hmm. generate the energy for what I call energetically expensive processes. And these are ovulation, fertilization, implantation, these all require mm-hmm. so much cellular energy. And now we have all of this great research coming out, especially from the IVF setting, that's showing that the potential for an embryo to be successful is actually really related to the ability of the egg cell's mitochondria to make energy. Mm-hmm. So any process that you can think about from the time the egg is developing to the time that it's fertilized and implanted is probably driven by our mitochondrial energy.
Oh, yeah. So clearly they are very important. And thank you for sharing all of that. And I think, you know, some of us have more science background than others, but I think it's easy to understand that if you don't have good mitochondria, you don't have good energy, and these things take a lot of energy. And so why don't you tell us some of the ways, you know, you mentioned that it is important for ovulation and stuff, but mm-hmm. We get a lot of information around mitochondria, around egg quality or sperm quality. Yes. Does that play a role? And can you talk about that?
Mm-hmm. I love that. So in order to answer this question, I want to think about the actual structure of the ovary. So inside our ovary, we have these cells. They're called granulosa cells. And they actually represent the largest cell population within the ovary. And these are specialized cells that are located in our ovarian follicles. So essentially the egg sac that our eggs are swimming around in. Now, these granulosa cells, they play a crucial role in the development of the egg. I like to call them the egg cell helpers or the egg cell support team. Some people will call them that. Mm-hmm. They provide nourishment to our developing egg cells. They help bring in nutrients. They help respond to hormonal signals from the brain. And so during ovulation, we have our mature egg, and it is released from these follicles, from these egg sacs. And then the remaining granulosa cells form a structure that's called the corpus luteum, which produces progesterone. We all know, if we've been mm-hmm. studying fertility, how important progesterone is. This corpus luteum will produce that progesterone to sustain the pregnancy, to sustain the endometrium, which is kind of the inner lining of the uterus. And that can really be crucial for a potential pregnancy. Well, the growth and the proliferation and maturation of those granulosa cells requires all of this energy from stable mitochondria. And mitochondrial dysfunction can disrupt this bidirectional communication that happens between our egg cells and the granulosa cells, which can lead to stagnant cell growth, delayed egg cell maturation, and it prevents this nourishment that can happen, and that affects our egg quality. So really, our mitochondria are driving all these processes because, in part, of their relationship to those all-star granulosa cells.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. And so poor egg quality can then lead to potential poor embryo quality, which in a natural setting might end up not in a pregnancy. In IVF, that might mean poor embryo quality and or failed transfers. Or if you can't make your egg cells, maybe a low egg count, these kind of things for people who, you know, want to see the results of what that means. So can you tell us some of the things that can disrupt our mitochondria or that can impact its health?
Mm-hmm, sure. I think the most important thing, and maybe for those who follow me on social media, I probably feel like I'm a broken record because I'm always talking about oxidative stress. And essentially what oxidative stress means is when we have an imbalance in our antioxidant mechanisms and things called reactive oxygen species, which are essentially compounds that can damage DNA. So the fact of the matter is we have some mitochondrial interaction with reactive oxygen species that just happens as time goes on, as we're aging. We have more mitochondrial DNA mutations, less mitochondrial DNA copy numbers. So it's really important that we're thinking about things like our antioxidant capacity so that we can preserve our mitochondria into the future. So oxidative stress is, I think, one of the biggest sources of mitochondrial damage. And that can come from a lot of places. I think one of the most common that I see, and probably you in your practice too, is hyperinsulinemia or elevated insulin, especially in our community that is, you know, seeking care for their fertility. Elevated insulin is a huge source of oxidative stress. So that's something I'm looking at all the time. Environmental toxicants. So that might mean exposure to secondhand smoke or even radiation therapy, some medications, even the products that we might be encountering in some of our products that we're putting on our skin, in our food supply. A high sugar diet is something I think about. Oxidized fats, something called advanced glycation end products. So this is what we see in things like fried food, foods that are cooked at high temperatures. We have this a sugar and a protein interact and they glycate. And these compounds can kind of circulate in that follicular fluid that we talked about and cause oxidative stress that damages our egg cells. So it's kind of scary when we talk about it. It's like, okay, well, what doesn't increase your oxidative stress? But it's empowering because we have so many tools to combat those exposures.
Yeah. So what kind of things, when you say, you know, antioxidant capacity, what does that mean? Like if someone is going to be mindful about maybe reducing toxins and maybe eating more steamed instead of fried foods and these kind of things, what can they do to increase their antioxidants? Because it's kind of a teeter-totter, right?
Absolutely.
We all are exposed to some oxidants.
I think that there's a whole range
of
things that one could do.
But I think
the most simple and the most approachable is to eat a rainbow of fruits and veggies every day. And I know we say that all the time and it's like, okay, that's so simple. But really, that's the easiest way that we can ensure broad spectrum antioxidant coverage. So I even have a checklist that we put on our refrigerator and it's called the phytonutrient checklist. It's from the Institute for Functional Medicine and it's like a little checkbox for red, orange, yellow, blue. And we put it on the fridge and every day we're like marking off our servings and my kids love it. And it's just so approachable, right? But in the real world, I'm often looking towards supplementation because it takes a lot of fruits and veggies to get those antioxidants. And for many reasons, it can be helpful to give us a little boost with some supplementation. So I'm thinking about things like vitamins A, vitamin C, CoQ10, resveratrol, alpha lipoic acid, and acetylcysteine is a favorite of mine. You probably love that one too. And it's kind of the sweetheart of the fertility world, isn't it? Melatonin is an excellent one as well. Curcumin, green tea. There's so many things we can use to support our antioxidant capacity, to support the health of our mitochondria, and to really power up all of these processes that will result in stronger ovulation, more robust progesterone, and implantation rates that are increased.
Yes, I love that. One of my favorite recommendations is to swap out a lot of your sweets with berries. So if you're a sweet tooth person and you reach for sugar or sugary things, you know, making something with blueberries, especially wild blueberries, or any of the berries are really high in antioxidants too, because they're so deeply colored, which I think is nice for some people to know it can taste sweet and be good for you.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. We have been talking all about the mitochondria and how important they are for boosting egg quality. While preparing for pregnancy or trying to conceive, it's important to give as much love and support to your mitochondria as possible, which is why I love recommending Needed's Egg Quality Support Supplement. It is packed full of antioxidants and mitochondrial supportive nutrients such as ALA, PQQ, green tea extract, and acetyl L-carnitine. Carnitine is actually one of my favorite mitochondrial supplements, so I love that this formula has it all. If you are thinking about pregnancy or you are currently trying to bring a baby into your life, I highly recommend adding Needed's egg quality support to your routine. Visit thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% off your first order. Again, visit thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20%. Okay, now back to the show.
So can you talk about how we assess the mitochondria? How would someone know if they have an issue or not?
I think for me, a lot of this goes into a really thorough history collection. So that's, I think, an area where we shine in naturopathic medicine, is conducting a really, really thorough intake and understanding how all of your body systems are working together. So firstly, if I have a patient who has fatigue, migraines, muscle pain, gets very tired with exercise easily, these are already red flags to me that the mitochondria aren't working as well. Even things like depression, insomnia, you kind of can get the feeling, get a sense of someone who's low energy in general. Like they're moving slower, their thought process is slower. That is already encouraging me to think about their mitochondrial energy production. But then we can do some testing. So I'll just call out a favorite test that I do is one by Genova. It's called the NutriVal because it gives us so much information about mitochondrial health. There's actually a mitochondrial assessment on that test. There's also an antioxidant capacity measurement on that test. It also breaks down all of the antioxidant nutrients like vitamins A, C, E, zinc, selenium. So I think that's really helpful. But the other thing that it measures is something called, it's a very fancy name, it's called 8-hydroxy-2-deoxyguanosine. So it's a mouthful, but 8-OHDG is how we often see it, you know, on a lab report. And this is a marker of oxidative damage, and it's associated with damage to the mitochondria. And essentially, this is a little molecule that forms in our bodies when we're exposed to certain toxins or when our cells are damaged by various factors like radiation, chemical exposure, that oxidative stress. And it's really interesting when you look at studies from the IVF clinic, we see that there's higher levels of 8-OHDG in the follicular fluid of cycles that don't actually result in a live birth. Oh, and so we're looking at it in the follicular fluid too, which is fascinating to me. It also appears to be elevated in the follicular fluid of patients with endometriosis. And we're seeing that it might actually drive an acceleration of aging within the reproductive system. So that's something that I really like to measure. And we can actually see it come down when we start implementing, you know, more antioxidants. And then some of the other mitochondrial lifestyle factors that I like to talk about, for example, sleeping for 8 hours a night, like another really approachable one. I always tell patients, I want you in bed before 11 p.m. in a room that's so dark that if you hold your hand in front of your face, you can't see it, right? Because that's going to support our endogenous melatonin production, which will help to combat some of those oxidative stressors. Things like just keeping your blood sugar stable, right? Because we don't want to have those spikes in insulin. Regular, moderate exercise. So for me, I kind of take the very modest approach of 150 minutes of moderate intensity exercise. For most people, that means you're working out, but you could still probably have a conversation. Of course, there's always people who might respond differently to other types of exercise. But in general, I think that's a good place to start. And then meditation. Meditation alone can lower oxidative stress. So I have on myself done NutriVals, you know, at like 3 and 6 month intervals, and I've watched my markers of oxidative stress decrease. I've seen my mitochondrial health markers improve. So this lifestyle stuff, it really works.
I know. I love that. Oh my gosh, that's amazing. I need to be running more NutriVals. I have done them in the past. And the other place that I know the 8-OHDG is tested is on Dutch tests. Do you ever run yep. Dutch tests and see that? So that's yep. another place if anyone is curious about checking their hormones, you can get a little extra information there. Do you know, and I actually don't know the answer to this, can you run 8-OHDG by itself?
You can.
Is there a test that does that, or mm-hmm. it's best to you do can. It in a comprehensive panel?
I like to do it in a panel just because it helps give me yeah. some context, but there are some labs. Mm-hmm. So I use Rupa Lab Shop, and mm-hmm. there are ways that you can go on there and order just that by itself, which is kind of nice for monitoring. Like maybe you want to get the mm-hmm. big full report the first time and then only monitor those yeah. few markers. So absolutely.
Cool. I just know someone might have that question. So what are some other strategies? You've mentioned sleep, a lot of the lifestyle practices. Are there any other specific things that people could start implementing to help support their mitochondria?
One that I have been loving is playing with temperature, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know if when you were in naturopathic school, if you sought out like all of the hydrotherapy treatments and yes, all of the physical medicine things, but I loved that stuff when I was a student. Mm-hmm. It's so fun. So I even love a contrast hydrotherapy. So when I'm in the shower, mm-hmm. I know a lot of people will just do a cold shower, which is awesome, but I love a little contrast mm-hmm. because I need yep. some heat too. So mm-hmm. I will do 3 minutes hot, 30 seconds cold, mm-hmm. repeat 3 times. And I love that. Yes. It's great. It helps get our lymphatic system really moving as well. So that's one of the strategies I like to use, just kind of cold exposure. In fact, I have a teacher who specializes in mitochondrial health, and he was telling me about just even really mild cold exposure and how it can stimulate what we call mitochondrial biogenesis. So the production of new mm-hmm. mitochondria. And it doesn't need to be super cold, around 60-ish degrees, and you're going to start ramping up your mitochondrial biogenesis. So for me, I live in the Seattle area. That's like every day, just going outside mm-hmm. my area.
Right.
Mild cold. And then the other thing that I've really been experimenting with is red light therapy. So I have an infrared sauna, and then I'm doing some red light exposure most days of the week. And I think mm-hmm. that's a really nice way to, number one, force yourself to have some quiet self-care time while you're powering up your mitochondria.
I love that. So when you're doing red light therapy, is it something that you put anywhere in your body to help your mitochondria? Do you want to put it around your ovaries? Like, is there a specific place?
Yeah. So I would say that the research here is mixed, but there mm-hmm. is some exciting research coming out about actually doing the red light therapy over the ovaries. I have some colleagues awesome. Who are using that and really having a lot of success. So I've personally just been doing it like on my upper extremities, my face, neck, and chest. But I'm really mm-hmm. thinking about having a focused red light therapy session that's over the pelvis. I even I have one colleague, she's an acupuncturist, but she has this whole setup where over her exam table are these red lights that are, I mean, right oh, over awesome. The ovaries. And it's so cool. A lot of low level laser therapy is another one that's kind of emerging mm-hmm. in the literature to support mitochondria in the ovaries. So I would anticipate that in the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to have a lot more data about this specifically.
Cool. I love that. So for someone listening, if they wanted to start making some of these changes, how long, and you might not know the answer to this, but I know with egg development, we talk mm-hmm. about it about 3 months for the egg to develop. With mitochondria support, is that the same? Do you want to do these treatments for about minimum 3 months because that's how long it takes the egg to develop? Or what do you typically recommend?
Yes, you read my mind. That's always what I say is let's call upon all of these things. And I think it's healthy for all of us to not get discouraged, to have healthy expectations. So I always say, let's give it at least 3 months before we really mm-hmm. assess and pivot and tailor our mm-hmm. treatment plan if we need to. So yes, that's exactly my approach.
Great. And so we've talked a lot about eggs and mitochondria and their relation to eggs. What about sperm? Does sperm have mitochondria and do they matter?
Mitochondria is so important for sperm. As you know, we could probably talk about this all day. I mean, when you look at sperm under the microscope, I remember the first time I did this and I was absolutely stunned to see how many sperm like weren't swimming, or they were chasing their mm-hmm. tails, or they had two heads or three heads. And mm-hmm. The more I learned about mitochondrial health, I realized that the fate of those sperm was really dependent on the mitochondria driving their ability to swim fairly quickly in a somewhat straight line. So I would mm-hmm. say that mitochondrial health is actually probably one of the most important factors in male fertility. And it's something I'm always thinking about with my dads to be. And it's mm-hmm. actually super interesting. Maybe we could take a little, I can draw a line in here into DNA repair genes just for a minute, if that's okay.
Please. Absolutely. So we know that
sometimes sperm can have damaged DNA and they will fertilize an egg. Well, in an egg that has adequate mitochondrial energy, there are these DNA repair genes inside the egg cell that can go to work cleaning up that damaged DNA, which absolutely blows my mind.
I know. It's so cool.
Truly just a magical orchestration of all of these moving pieces, which it's amazing that like any of us turn out normal when there's all of these intricate processes that are happening. So all of that to say, we need healthy mitochondria. We need robust antioxidants for those DNA repair genes to work inside the egg cell and to kind of clean up that DNA repair. So when we have sperm that have more mitochondrial defects, that process becomes more challenging for our DNA repair genes inside the egg cell. So this is one reason I always say, let's really focus on paternal health during that preconception phase mm-hmm. two, because it's really going to matter when it comes time to fertilize an implant.
Oh, wow, that's amazing. Gosh, the body is so cool. Every time I see a new baby and they've got all their fingers and their toes and their eyes are like, you know, perfect, I'm just like, this is, the more you know, the more you learn about the body, the more magical it seems, you know, it just is so crazy. So just quick question. I know people have this question and have asked me a lot. A lot of people know about avoiding heat with sperm and men, but doing these mitochondrial things, can they do hot, cold, or just cold, or is there too cold or too hot that you recommend? Or do you just have them stay away from the hot, cold situation when they're trying to conceive?
I mean, in terms of contrast hydrotherapy, like the 3 minutes hot, 30 seconds cold, in the shower where the temperatures are still fairly well controlled, I feel okay about that. What I do mm-hmm. discourage against, and I'm certain that you do too, is the hot tubs, the hot mm-hmm. yoga, the sauna, the prolonged super hot. Now, I'm actually interested. I'm going to turn this question back on you, because this question has come up for me, and I haven't found really strong evidence either way, but people have asked me if it will affect their sperm to do a cryotherapy session.
Oh, interesting. I thought you were going to say cold plunge. And I would say it all depends on the temperature and for how long. But cryotherapy, you know, I don't know. I haven't seen the data on that. Yeah. I would probably err on the cautious side of not during the actual preconception window, because the temperatures are so low.
Yes.
Right? Like they use cryotherapy to like almost freeze off lipogenic cells, like fat cells and people. So if it can do that, I would imagine that the damage, because sperm can be damaged at high temperatures and really low temperatures too. They like to just be perfect. But I do agree with you that the contrast hydrotherapy, because people ask me that, can I do that? I think it's totally fine. It's sitting for long periods of time where it can like kind of zap those. But yeah, I would probably err on the side of caution, but that would be an interesting study to do.
That would be interesting. Sure. Okay, we're aligned then. I tell people, like, you've invested so much into this.
Yeah.
You're deeply, you know, deeply invested in the success of your fertility. So let's just not take our chances. And so I've advised against cryotherapy. But if there's any researchers out there, we want to see the papers. Yeah. We send them.
I know. That'd be great. It's so easy to test male fertility because it's just so easy to look at sperm pre and post stuff. So another question I have for you, which we learn a lot about in school and stuff, is that mitochondria has its own kind of set of DNA. And can you speak a little bit about maybe the inheritedness of the mitochondria, how it comes from our mothers? Can you just speak to that for people who don't know?
Yes, I love every year during Mother's Day, I will post about this, like mitochondrial DNA, you got it from your mama, which is so cool. Yeah. So essentially, mitochondria are inherited, maternally inherited. So you really get your mitochondrial DNA from your mom, which there's, if you want to do, if anybody is listening and they want to Google this, Googling all the way back to mitochondrial Eve is the most interesting read that you will ever have. And seeing how we've inherited over generations and generations these mitochondrial DNA patterns. But what's really interesting about this is we have this great opportunity to support our mitochondria as mothers-to-be, because that mitochondrial DNA will be passed down to our children, to our grandchildren, through the generations. Now, there was some research in, I want to say, the late 90s that showed in some people there will be paternal mitochondria that are inherited, but the maternal mitochondria will kick them out eventually. So I think it's an emerging data, the more that we understand about genetics, but really mitochondria are, it's like a uniquely maternal little cellular structure, which energetically, I just am really, I vibe with that.
Yeah, that's so cool. I love that. And so for people listening, you know, a lot of people are taught that our genes never change, there's no impact on them. Yet we know now with epigenetics, that's not true, that our, yes, our diet, lifestyle, and exposures can change that. So is that the same with mitochondrial DNA, that what we choose to do and how we choose to be can actually impact our mitochondria for the better? Is that true?
I like to say that our genetics are the part of our story that's written in pen, but then epigenetics is the part that's written in pencil. And so we can do some editing there, which I think is really empowering. And what we see is we can lower mitochondrial mutations. So we can actually improve the health of our mitochondrial DNA. We can actually increase mitochondrial DNA copy numbers. So that's kind of, this kind of goes back to that mitochondrial biogenesis. Like, we can bolster our mitochondrial production. So absolutely, these lifestyle changes can be reflected in some of these mitochondrial biomarkers.
Oh, that's amazing.
Feels so good.
It feels so good. And it's so empowering to know that we can do so much to support this, and for not only ourselves and having the energy for fertility, but also the energy once we become a mom to breastfeed and to be there for our children. And so, you know, I think people in the fertility space and those who are trying to conceive, which I've been there, where you get so hyper-focused on just getting the baby, but we don't think long-term postpartum and what it means for us as mothers and how our experience of motherhood is going to be. And the more we do now to support our mitochondria, it not only helps conception and our babies, but it helps us, because then we have the energy to continue to enjoy our lives with our children, right?
Absolutely. Can I say one more piece of a power of mitochondria? Because you just are reminding me with, like, thinking of all these, how our mitochondria help us through these various phases of life. And really, whether we're trying to conceive or we're pregnant or we're postpartum, our hormones are obviously so important and integral to how we feel in our body. And one part that I forgot to mention, which is so important, is that our mitochondria really help us to make hormones, because in order to make our sex hormones, especially like estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, the backbone is cholesterol. And so how that works is cholesterol is shuttled into our mitochondria, where it then goes through a series of enzymatic reactions that help it turn into estrogen or progesterone or whatever it is that we're making. And so progesterone is one we talk about all the time in the fertility world. And when patients have chronically low progesterone, it's usually they're so frustrated and, you know, maybe they've even tried some supplemental progesterone, but they're always wondering, what can I do to help my own body make progesterone? So I'm thinking about the mitochondria, because we know that within our mitochondria, that cholesterol turns into pregnenolone, and then pregnenolone turns into progesterone. And so we can't forget about our mitochondrial health when our hormones are suffering.
Oh, wow, that's amazing. And so this applies you know, hormones are important even after pregnancy, right? As women start to transition even into the perimenopausal time. So if you're listening to this and you have a mother or anybody who, you know, is dealing with hormonal issues, mitochondria are important for everybody. So I love that you brought that up, and you're such a wealth of knowledge. I always learn so much from you.
Thanks for letting me sneak that in.
This is amazing. Of course. So is there anything you want to leave people with? Any last minute thoughts or big ideas or anything else that you want to impart on people?
Well, I think what I'll say is the things that we do to support our mitochondrial health, it's extends far beyond just our reproductive health and our fertility. These are the same mechanisms that are going to help reduce the risk for heart disease and type 2 diabetes and cognitive decline later in life. So like you just said, it's about having that healthy pregnancy and bringing home a healthy baby, but it's really about cultivating health, abundant health for fertility and beyond, so that you can enjoy that family you worked so hard for.
I love that. This has been amazing. Where can people find you and learn more? Tell us all the things.
Yes. So my website, drkaliawaddles.com, is a great place to read about the services that I offer and just what I've got going on. And then always follow on Instagram at Functional Fertility. That's my favorite place to connect and have fun and share all things fertility. So would love to meet everyone there and talk fertility.
Perfect. Oh my gosh. Thank you so much. Thank you for your time. And I know that everyone's going to love this episode. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Healthy as a Mother podcast. In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and send to a friend who could benefit from this content. We're so excited to share more on becoming and being a mother next time.
And please remember that the ideas and views of this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to serve as a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis or treatment of any illness or disease. Consult with your provider before integrating this information into your own care plan. And remember, a healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.